Okay, we're continuing in our study, talking on the covenant applied. And tonight is a very connected topic to that. It comes down to the dusty details, and it's finding a helpmeet, how that applies and how it fits into the covenant. It's only when we understand the covenant and how it applies to the dusty details of life that we're able to prioritize and focus upon those things that are most effective for advancing the kingdom of God, the thing that brings glory to God's name. As we look at the very beginning of creation, we see that central to the outworking of God's kingdom plan was the marriage covenant. So at the very core of mankind being able to accomplish the whole of God's will, we see the covenant of marriage being introduced, the bond of marriage being introduced into the picture. The dominion mandate given to Adam required the introduction of Eve and becoming one flesh with her if it was going to be realized. This is the norm for the outworking of God's eternal plan. I've said before, however, that God also has a small percentage of laborers in his kingdom that don't get married. And so as I focus tonight upon the importance of marriage in the kingdom and God's unfolding kingdom work, this is not intended to belittle or undermine singleness. That is, those whom God has ordained to use without a helpmeet. So God has that aspect as well. The essence of the marriage covenant is not procreation. As important as filling the earth with godly seed is, that's not the essence of why God shows us in the beginning why Eve was introduced into the equation. The core of the marriage covenant is intimate fellowship, which is vital to effective ministry being generated by the family unit. We see Adam and Eve, Adam before Eve was given to him, and we are told that there was no helpmeet comparable to him. And we hear God saying in Genesis 2:18, "It is not good that man should be alone." And it was under those conditions and within that context that God gave Adam his wife. Thus we see fellowship and companionship is fundamental to the marriage covenant and to advancing God's purposes. Another vital component in advancing God's kingdom is momentum. And momentum means generational faithfulness, this generation after generation with compounded force going forward in terms of God's kingdom truth. We must not lose sight of the close connection between marriage and generational faithfulness. The covenant view of marriage is inseparable from this. The marriage and generational faithfulness imply one another as God works out his plans on earth. So if you see that, the dominion covenant given to Adam, the supplying of Eve, and the responsibility with respect to raising godly seed. The family is one of God's ordained authorities in the world. And as we've seen before, inseparable from the covenant is authority and purpose. So they're given authority, and then the purpose that people are given authority is to advance and protect God's kingdom. That's why God gives authority. Your purpose in having this authority that has been delegated to you is to protect and advance God's kingdom. So to embrace the biblical idea about the centrality of marriage covenant and generational faithfulness to the outworking of God's plan, along with, as you're trying to hold that, with God's ordained authority structure in the family, holding those things all together should naturally lead us to apply covenantal truth to finding a helpmeet. Why wouldn't we apply it to this fundamental area of the covenant, this core aspect of covenantal life? Granted, there can be many different circumstances in life, which means everything doesn't fit into neat boxes. However, the covenantal principles are universal and thus always applicable in this area of finding a helpmeet. The kingdom advances when we honor the covenantal principles of faith, authority, and kingdom effectiveness through generational faithfulness. That's how God honors that, when our mindset is along those things: faith, authority, kingdom effectiveness. And part of that is through generational faithfulness. These things should guide and motivate all that we do. How can I apply these things? So parents have the authority and the responsibility to prepare their sons and daughters unto this end, an end that will be most beneficial to God's kingdom, which means boys and young men should be trained and equipped to fulfill their God-defined roles and responsibilities. In a nutshell, to work hard, to provide for a family, and lead it with wisdom, knowledge, and true faith. So that's, in a nutshell, those are the goals. Girls and young ladies should be equipped to be helpmeets to their future husbands. The details are many, but the focus is unto this end. Marriage is about advancing the kingdom of heaven, not about men and women fulfilling their desires and their lusts. The purpose of marriage has its primary focus of generational impact. That's the primary focus of marriage, is generational impact. How can we have the most impact on a generational scale? And so it is vital that parents prepare their sons and daughters for God-glorifying marriage. The Old Testament uses a word for bridegroom or son-in-law that also means to be circumcised. Son-in-law or bridegroom, the word is also used to be circumcised. Parkhurst, in his Hebrew lexicon, says that the word, and I quote him, never directly expresses the relation of the bridegroom to his bride, but to the bride's parents. Okay, so this idea of circumcision is now being connected to the bride's parents. That's in Parkhurst's lexicon, page 238. Thus it is used for the daughter's husband and bridegroom. Jacinius, in his lexicon, says the word means to give one's daughter in marriage. So it can be used, like, can be translated like this. So this is its root meaning, but it's also translated as to give one's daughter in marriage. And it can be used for father-in-law when it is talking about the bride's father, not the groom's father. So it's used as father-in-law. If you'll have that Hebrew word, you'll say, okay, this is father-in-law, but it's talking specifically about the bride's father, not the groom's. A different word is used for the boy's father when referring to him as a father-in-law. Jacinius also points out that the word is used in the sense of doing a circumcision. Thus, the Bible, when talking about a groom, repeatedly draws attention to him being circumcised, and that the girl's parents are responsible for making sure that their future son-in-law is circumcised. In fact, this idea is so closely tied to the girl's parents that they are defined as the ones who perform the circumcision. Now, they don't literally do this. Even in the Hebrew culture, they didn't. But the idea that is communicated by using such a word to define these relationships shows the responsibility that God places upon the girl's parents to make sure that the man they give their daughter is a covenantally faithful man. That is the fundamental responsibility placed upon the parents-in-law and upon the bride's parents. In the modern marriage service, you have the father giving his daughter to her husband. But this is, for the most part, today merely ceremonial. And many times the daughter might not have been speaking to her father for the last 10 years, and now that she's getting married, she needs him to come and give her away at the altar. In Scripture, however, it's not about ceremony, but covenantal, flowing from the father's authority and responsibility. He has oversight of his daughter, and thus is the one ordained to be her protector. A father is to protect his daughter from physical harm and spiritual harm, and vital to protecting her in this way entails protecting her heart. And vital to protecting her heart is making sure that she doesn't give her heart to the wrong man, the wrong person. You see, girls give their hearts to people and then follow their heart. And when that has happened, it's very difficult for them to be critical in evaluating the pros and cons of the situation that they're in. So once a girl gives her heart to a young man, at that point it's very hard for her to really see the pitfalls that might be lying ahead, that might be very obvious to others around. And so a very vital aspect of a father's protection of his daughter is that she doesn't give her heart to a young man. So it's controlling in the sense of protecting her from that getting into such a situation. So a girl should always have her heart protected by a man. And I realize this is highly offensive to the modern ear and the modern mindset in the world. I mean, that would be, when you're talking about gender equality and things like that, this is just wagging a red rag in the face of a bull. But it is the truth. A father must pursue, obtain, and hold his daughter's heart. A father's goal is that his daughter gives her heart to him, and this is how he is able to protect her. Though the end goal is to transfer jurisdiction from himself to another man, her husband. That's the goal. I'm going to transfer this authority jurisdiction. When a father gives his daughter to her husband, she gives her heart to that man, and he assumes the responsibility under God to protect her. The man, first the father and then the husband, has the authority to lead, but with authority in God's kingdom comes covenantal responsibility, and the responsibility in this context is to protect. And protection includes providing for her needs. So you can see the whole thing. When a young man says, I want to take this lady to be my wife, and he's going to receive the authority and the protective role of the father. And the father has to be satisfied that this man is capable of doing that and that he will do it faithfully. And then he hands over that mantle or that jurisdiction to this young man. And part of that responsibility to protect is to provide. And so all that comes into the evaluation of a suitor by the father. The dowry in the Old Testament had a man giving bride price to get married. And so when he got married, he had to provide this bride price. And that had to do with protection as well. It was a very fundamental aspect of protection for the wife, while at the same time provided, approved the young man's ability to provide for her. Look here, I can provide for her because look, there I'm able to do this. The dowry protected the wife and the children from being left destitute if this man died, or if he frivolously divorced her. There was protection. She had the dowry. And the way a father protects his daughter is by having her heart and helping her develop a godly character along with fundamental skills that a wife needs to be a good helpmeet to her husband. That's a vital part of protection, because you're setting her up to be joined to a godly man. Because a godly man is not looking for somebody who's not prepared. He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be. To be a godly wife and mother is what the father is preparing this woman to be. Now, each family can decide what other skills might be useful for the kingdom along, as long as they are fundamentally kept within the principles that God has laid down. You know, you can't lay out, well, a girl can do this, she can never do that. Don't come up with those kinds of things unless you can specifically prove from Scripture why she cannot do something. So don't jump to, you know, you can get into the debate, well, a girl should never go to college. Now, there's no basis for that in the Scriptures at all. You've got to evaluate that in the whole context of God's revelation with respect to roles and responsibilities and effectiveness and kingdom focus. So if your daughter says, I want to be a combat marine, you can say straight out, absolutely not. There's no revelational justification for that. In fact, revelation cries the opposite. But God's revelation doesn't show that this is acceptable as a girl's calling. Once again, that's another politically incorrect statement. The parents' preparation and equipping of their children for marriage is for kingdom effectiveness. When young men and women are biblically mature, then their ability to find a mature spouse increases. And when this happens, then kingdom effectiveness is enhanced. You see, that's the goal. It's always kingdom. Why am I training my child? Because I want kingdom effectiveness. How does this enhance kingdom effectiveness? Well, if they're well-trained and they hook up with a well-trained spouse, then we see real impact for the kingdom. It's all about the kingdom. When two people with godly character, godly skills and ethics and kingdom zeal are united in marriage, you are splitting the atom with respect to kingdom weaponry. That's what's taking place now. In other words, this union is a nuclear missile capable of inflicting massive, generationally compounded destruction upon the kingdom of darkness. And that's how important and how central it is to God's kingdom and the working of his plans. This kind of thinking and thus preparation is not central to our goals for our children. We have been sidetracked. If we are doing other things instead of investing in God's nuclear program, we have misunderstood our responsibilities before the Lord and failed to perceive God's mechanism by which he thrusts his kingdom forward. So the way a father protects his daughter's heart from becoming entangled in inappropriate relationships is by not giving opportunity for such relationships to develop. This requires his daughter's having given their hearts to him, so he's got to pursue and get their hearts, and being very open with them about the whole spouse subject. It's got to be a very comfortable, often discussed subject. When a father has his daughter's heart, she'll trust him in the process of helping her find a spouse for her, and knowing that this will be best for the kingdom. In other words, making sure he is a covenant man as he searches for this man, he's got to be a covenantal man. The girl's father has the authority from God to grant or withhold his permission for any man to develop a relationship with his daughter with the intent of marriage. So he is the one that is held accountable by God to stand in that position and protect her in that circumstance. All of this is to be grounded in a very close, deep relationship between the father and his daughter. You see, many try to paint the biblical role of a father that the father is to have in finding the right spouse for his daughter as a cold, clinical, oppressive activity. Many people, you even mention that in the modern day, and it's regarded as something that is just oppressive. And then they will start to cite all kinds of horror stories to you about what happened and what they heard of so-and-so in India and this person in this country and how oppressive it was. Certainly, this idea can and has been abused because it is possible for fathers to be oppressive. But this cannot cancel out the way God has ordained spouses to be found, any more than the abuse of corporal punishment can be used to cancel out the legitimate use of the rod in God's family building. The abuse of a God-ordained procedure should not make us apologize for it or be embarrassed by it. So the modern insistence on equality of the sexes removes from the young girl God's ordained protection for them, where she can just go out now and she can travel through the world and find Mr. Right. There's nothing ceremonial about God's ordained order, whereas when fathers give their daughters in marriage, but rather it is a matter of authority, jurisdiction, and responsibility to make sure their hearts are protected and the kingdom is advanced. That's the purpose that he is doing that. The ideal situation in getting two young people together, bearing in mind life is very far from ideal, but you have the ideal situation and then you just make accommodations to the different dynamics in life, but within those parameters can at least set a ballpark for operating. And the ideal situation is for the young man's father, to be in communication with his son about the topic, and then together decide upon the qualifications, the appropriate things that a young woman should have, and they could even then discuss certain particular people to make up a godly union. The father of the young man then should approach the girl's father and ask to talk to him about the topic. The boy's father might himself still be exploring the possibility, and by meeting with the girl's father, they're going to sit down and discuss and evaluate and communicate, exploring the suitability of the girl that the young boy's father could still be doing, and while at the same time, the young girl's father is exploring the possibility of this young man and the family that they would be united to. It's an important aspect. It's not an absolute aspect, but when families are involved, realize you're marrying families. Families are being joined together. So that's part of the dynamic. The girl's father will want more information about the young man. So if both fathers think that this is something that should be taken further, then the girl's father can set up meetings between himself and the young man. It's okay, I want to get to know you. And the purpose of these meetings will be for the girl's father to determine whether he thinks the two would be an effective kingdom team. Included in determining this would be exploring the depths of the young man's character, kingdom vision, those kinds of things. How do you evaluate this? How do I see these things fitting together? The father is not going to pour his life into equipping his daughter to be an effective weapon in God's kingdom and then place her under the authority of a man who has little zeal for the kingdom. How is he going to do that? So he wants to get to know, who's this guy? What is his purpose in the kingdom? How does he see the kingdom? So to place his daughter in such a situation where this young man has no real purpose for the kingdom would not only be foolish and rebellion, it would be cruel to his daughter to place her under the authority. You've got to realize when a man gives his daughter away in marriage, he is releasing all authority, all control, all direction of her life and placing her under the control and direction of another man. It's not a small thing. Either for the father who's giving his daughter away or for the girl who is giving herself, placing herself under that authority. So never be presumptive about your authority as a man and as a leader and the authority you have over your wife or will have in time to come. So as the father's exploring here the character and the vision of the young man. Now if a young man is not interested in spending time to get known by the girl's father, then the father has no reason to continue in that discussion. Because if the young man cannot appreciate the significance of why the father needs to get to know him, then he is not in a position. The father has no basis to feel comfortable with that man's ability to have authority and jurisdiction over his daughter. So at that stage, the young man's made it very easy for the father. He can say, okay, thanks you very much, but we shall not go any further than this. And fathers, do not apologize for having a standard and expecting a standard. Do not be embarrassed about that. At the same time, you're not expecting, I don't know, pick one of the great saints. You're not expecting a great saint. You're dealing with young men who are maturing as well. So it's not, you're not setting up a bar that cannot be cleared. But let's say the young man has many meetings with the girl's father, and the father is satisfied that things could progress to the next level. Now he can bring his daughter into the picture. I would suggest it's not an absolute. Families can weigh it up, and circumstances and different occasions can weigh it up to evaluate. But up until now, it's probably best to even keep the daughter completely ignorant of what's going on. And I think there's sometimes a good reason for that, and that is because if the father determines that things should not move further because of different A, B, C, D, then it doesn't become embarrassing and awkward for the young people concerned. The young man has approached and the father said, I don't see that this can go forward. And there's not like awkwardness now where the girl has heard about it and she's wondering now. So I would suggest that's the best way to go forward, to keep it confidential. But even as you're having these exploratory discussions, strict confidence is necessary, and that's an important part. There's no need for anyone else to be told. Obviously, you've got the wives involved and as you're weighing through these things. But strict confidence is an important aspect and a principle that should be upheld until such time as something definite is arrived at. You see, it's not easy for a young guy to work up the courage to approach somebody and say, you know, could we maybe explore this possibility? And so you want to respect that courage at the same time without, you know, saying, putting it out on the grapevine, you know, that this is what's happened and no, he turned him down or whatever. And, you know, he's got to build up courage again to ask somebody else. Because, so all I'm saying is just be sensitive to that. It's not something that should be brandished around. It should be something that is honored. And then the young man can with courage. Because he knows he's got to be doing it. He's got to be seeking and exploring. So he can go forth with courage. Should the girl's father in the discussion with the boy's father, or later on after his discussions with the boy, decide that this doesn't think that this is right, then he says, no, I don't think this should go further. I don't think he's necessarily obliged to have to explain all his reasons why. He's at liberty to state his reasons, and he could tell the young man what needs to do first. He might say, well, this, if you cleared this hurdle, we could go forward. Or I want you to establish this. I want you to get out of credit card debt before we go forward. I want you to get a stable job. I want you to have some savings that, or no, not necessarily stably. I want you to have an ability to practically show me how accommodation could be provided. Things like that, whatever the father feels are necessary to have. And you know, each family could vary within that as to what those would be. But they could lay it forward and say, this is what I require. Now, obviously, the young man could accept those conditions, or he could say, I'm out of here. Those conditions are too stringent. I don't agree. So, you know, that's the young man is also at liberty at that point to go his separate way. And then, really, no confidence is broken. They can separate amicably and in a mature way. And a young man must not take a father's refusal to grant permission to pursue a relationship with his daughter as a personal affront, but rather he should trust God's ordained structures to guide him to the right spouse that God has ordained for him. God has given the girl's father the authority and the responsibility to give or not to give his daughter in marriage. And so when a young man gets a no from a father, he has to accept this as from the Lord, trusting the Lord is guiding. The Lord is guiding in the sense. And if they're both acting honorably, then we trust the Lord's guiding and protection in this matter. So if the father has completed his confidential meetings with the young man and has determined that all his specifications have been met, now he can speak to his daughter and tell her what's been taking place and why he thinks the young man is someone that she should get to know better. Okay, he's not telling her now that this is the man she has to marry. He's not saying this is the only path to go. And he's saying, no, this is an opportunity now where I'm presenting it to you as I think it's a good idea to get to know him. Now remember, this doesn't come out of left field to the girl. Okay? She might have no inkling of Joe Soap being the guy that the father's suggesting she get to know, but this doesn't come out of left field because the father and the daughter have been talking about marriage for many years and she has shared her heart with him about her desires, the kind of man that she would love to marry, and he has instructed her about what to look for in a man and a husband and counseled her thinking on these areas. He's shaped her thinking so she's not just got this romantic view of Mr. whatever muscle man from California surfing on the, you know, those kind of really shallow things that people can have. So he's been instructing her on that, and so there's this intimacy between father and daughter on these topics and subjects. And so the father and daughter are now on the same page in a sense and saying, okay, we've talked about these things. I've now looked into this. The daughter trusts the father and they deeply love each other and they want what's best for the kingdom and her heart remains protected. So in talking with his daughter about this young man and giving her time to pray about the request, everything is to continue and remain in strict confidence, even at that point. You know, you don't want the young girl putting it up on Facebook, what's going on or what. So, you know, you keep the confidence there and this is still exploratory. As a father and daughter continue to speak about this together, it will become clear to both of them what the next step is. So in the kind of father-daughter relationship that I've been explaining, and describing. They will arrive at one mind on this, whichever way it goes. I believe they will, as they talk about this. The father's evaluated the young man, and he brings that to the daughter. He'll explain to her why he thinks this is something that could possibly work. And if she's got huge reservations, she can share them, and together they will come to a conclusion on the matter. Should it be negative, the father will then inform the young man that it is not going forward. But if positive, then the father will set up parameters for the young man and the young woman to get to know each other with a view to seeing whether they should be married. Okay, that's all it is at this stage. They are now taking it to the next level, to the next step, to pursue whether this is something that could be brought to a marriage. And there's to be nothing physical in this relationship at that stage. There's no holding hands. There's no need to make physical contact and that kind of stuff. This is purely interaction and discussion. This is what we're going to do. We want to get to know each other. We want to see if we really are compatible and have the same goals and vision and whatever. Enough groundwork has been done so that they can have time to talk alone. I believe they can be done alone. I've heard some suggestions at this stage that they could never be alone. I think it needs to be an open place, public place, but they can be alone. You know, you don't need to secretly tape the conversations. You don't need to be snooping on their conversations like that. I think if you have to do that, you have failed in your preparation of your daughter and you have failed in your evaluation of the young man. So, you know, you're foolish to even be putting them together. At that stage, let them discuss it. I would, like I said, I recommend it take place in the open, other people around, but they can be private, so nobody's hearing their conversation. And during this time, both should keep in mind, both the young man and young woman should keep in mind that what is happening is merely a deeper looking into the possibility of marriage, which means either one could decide that they do not think marriage is right for them and that they should have the liberty at that point still to say, okay, I'm not sure that this is what is going to work for me. And so they have the liberty that in this process to end the process and both enter into this step accepting the possibility that that could happen, and accepting that is to say, even if it's not me who comes to that conclusion, I accept it if you do, thus not producing bitterness in anybody. God is sovereign, and as we have set up steps and procedures and protections as best as we can, we've got to ultimately trust in God's sovereign hand and leading. And so if something turns out where I thought this was it and it doesn't work out, we bow our hearts to God's sovereign purpose and plan. And if preparation work is done well in the beginning, before you even get to this level, a break off at this stage, I think, would be a rare thing when you've got to that depth of discussion. But it's still a possibility and can happen. Once the young couple has come to the conclusion that they want to be married, I believe this is where the proposal fits in. I'm open for correction on that. You know, to my mind, the father has, in a sense, when he's given his permission for the young man to get to know his daughter, I'm not sure, you might want to introduce another stage that the young man's then got to come back to you and ask for your daughter's hand. I'm not sure personally. I'm open for ideas, but I think the proposal still fits in there, and I think the proposal still can then come be a surprise in the sense where the young man arrives, they've just had these discussions for a long time, and you know, he decides on this certain day he's going to propose and see where it goes. I would say that the first people told should be the parents when that's happened, but I'm not sure. You might say, I still want you to ask for her hand. I'm not sure how you can say no at that stage, so then it just becomes a ceremony, a formality. You see, if you've already allowed the young man to start this process, and obviously the father's going to still continue to be involved with his daughter while she's talking to the young man, and so he's very much being kept abreast of how the thing's developing. So my suggestion is, I don't think he needs to come and ask for her hand. If you want that, because that's traditionally how it's done, then you could insist on it. But you might have to be able to explain it to the young man how it fits into the whole system, which might be difficult. Now, once you've got to a point with this young couple and have decided marriage is what God intends for us, delaying the marriage, to my mind, has no relevance or basis. You know, we mustn't turn the wedding into a romanticism, into a romantic ideal. You know, the young girl, her dream wedding was to be married in the forest preserve with a backdrop of yellow and red fall leaves. And this is end of October that he proposes. So we have to wait a whole year before we can get married, so we can get that one photo op. Okay, that's romanticism. We need. It's So, okay, you're still created. Okay, well, that's good. So now that, that just supports my argument even more. So yes, even our concept of romance must be covenantal. It must be defined by Scripture. Because it's very possible to get floated off in our romantic ideals. And marriage is about kingdom work. It's about dusty reality in life. And it doesn't mean you can't have a lovely dress and a nice setting. But really, plan the wedding, I would say, pretty soon once the decision is made. You know, might have some practical decisions to make and just time enough to get things together. But there's no reason then to hang around. Now, obviously, much more could be said on this topic, but I think enough has been covered to give a kind of a practical, hands-on thing as to how it possibly could work. This is not the definitive word on how this process can be carried out. And like I said, there can be many different dynamics. You can have a young man whose father, he doesn't have a father, or his father is a godless man who's not interested. So, you know, then you've missed out that other step. This is an important point, particularly if the young man is a Christian and from a Christian family. I recommend strongly, at great effort and expense, obviously within reason, but get to meet and spend some time with that young man's family if they are believers. I mean, even if they're not, try and get together. Meeting the family and seeing him in the presence with his parents reveals a lot as to what's happening. And if a young man meets a family where the mother is in charge of that family, be very wary of jumping at a daughter in that family, unless she really understands biblical authority and she is going to act differently to her mother. Because otherwise you'll just be inheriting a whole pass-on effect, or unless the young man is very strong and confident that he can be the leader. So, you know, you're weighing up all kinds of different things. It's very practical, it's very dusty. So that's why I would recommend strongly you meet the family, spend some time, discuss with them, you know, hit on some controversial topics and just see how they react. It all helps to just know who people are and, you know, what their mindset is and what's up there, what's hidden that you might not have perceived. All right, are there any questions or additions, clarifications that can be made? If a young man has grown up with a domineering mother, the girl's father should pick up on that and realize, okay, there's something. So, for example, if the mother comes to meet with him about her son marrying his daughter, that's somewhat of a red flag, unless the father's dead. Yeah, but you're still going with your eyes open at that stage. That doesn't end the deal. You still have to evaluate and then get to know the young man, but also see him in his home context. And it might be an interesting point to raise in the home context with the mother and the young man present. It's a ministry. They've opened the door to you, and you can put your foot in it. How a man treats his mother is a very important indicator. So you got a young man who's abrasive, harsh, indifferent to his mother. A girl should not be deceived that she's going to be treated differently. So these are all indicators. These are just all practical things. You don't have to have a PhD and you don't have to have some mystical light flashing from heaven. We're looking at lives and what's godly character, what godly relationships are. If a young man is not willing, if he's not humble and willing to be taught, those are red flags. They don't close the door, but they're red flags. So young man, be prepared. If you believe there's a girl that's suitable, be prepared to be instructed. First, plead with your dad to get you up to speed if you're not up to speed. One thing we mustn't fall into, and that is, well, I didn't get married like that. That wasn't my standard. And look, I'm all right. You know, we mustn't presume on God's grace. You know, that's a satanic statement to say that. People use it the whole time. I went through public school and look at me. And they might be a nice, godly Christian. But to presume upon God's mercy and grace and say, oh, well, chuck yourself off the corner of that temple and surely God will hold you up. He won't let you dash your foot. You see, it's a satanic concept. Well, I was okay. That idea that it's possible to do that and God will preserve you. Because going through the life that I lived as a young man, Elise and I should have both still been running in the opposite directions. God's mercy and grace brought us together and instructed us. But that doesn't give us the right now to chuck those things off. We were truly ignorant. We were believers, but we were very ignorant. Any other comments? All right, well, why don't we spend some time in prayer?